You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Kelly Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call, you can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We have many, many things coming up for you on the show today. In hour number two, Lisa Schiller from the Better Business Bureau will be joining us to talk about the latest scams on which we should be updated. I just got another call from the Western Union. This has been happening like every 3 days lately. So I think we'll bring that up with Lisa Schiller from the Better Business Bureau. If you have been pestered by something recently that you think is a scam, you can always let us know. Again, text it in at 855-752-4842. We will wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the Governor Gunslinger edition, so stick around for that. Right now, though, we are delighted to have joining us live Representative Mark Pocan. Good morning, sir. Thanks for making time for us today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me. Ask your consumer person something, if you would, please.
Sure.
I noticed a huge uptick on fake emails about my Social Security account ever since DOGE started messing around with our data. And I think that people have gotten very wise to trying to rip people off, because a lot of people tell me they're constantly checking their statement to make sure that nothing's happened to
sure.
it, because they don't trust these folks at DOGE. But I think that's made the number of people trying to rip people off increase. So for your listeners, that might be useful.
That's an excellent point, Representative. We will absolutely bring that up next hour with Lisa Schiller. Wanted to start off, there's a lot of things to talk about going on in Washington, but I wanted to start off with the tariffs. Depending upon who you speak to, it's either the greatest thing in the world and the most brilliant thing America has ever done, or this is a disaster. And I was very surprised to see this comment from the president of the MMAC, Dale Coyne, who was a longtime Republican in Wisconsin and then took over at the MMAC. He calls the tariffs, quote, one of the largest tax increases in U.S. history, unquote. It's kind of interesting how once you get away from the inner workings of the party that, I don't know, you can say true things.
Yeah. So unless you're a big fan of videos of monkeys throwing dung, there's no reason to really like the tariffs, because Trump's tariffs are a tax on all of us when they're done in this indiscriminate way. Now, I'm going to be real clear. I support targeted use of tariffs. If you're dumping cheap steel from China, we need to support our steel industry and the workers here. We should put a tariff on it. And there's other things that we should, especially with China, use strategic tariffs. But strategic use of tariffs is smart. Throwing dung is not. And what they're doing right now is the equivalent of throwing monkey dung by putting tariffs on absolutely everything without, you know, any thought whatsoever. You know, it's a concept of a plan, not a plan. And at that point, it becomes a tax on all of us. So I rarely say I completely agree with the head of the MMAC.
Right.
But, you know, it's true. It really does. It adds costs for the average person, and for a small business owner, it's really volatile, because then you don't know what to charge. I mean, I can tell you, we have a small business still, and I don't do anything day to day there, but you know, different contacts that you get, you don't know where a tariff's coming or not. Oh, now they're postponed. And if you don't have that kind of consistency, it's really hard to do your day-to-day business sometimes. So there's a lot of problems with the way tariffs are being handled right now.
I think that's something that, you know, what you just said now here, we're looking at, like, whether you're talking about tariffs or you're talking about DOGE or you're talking about immigration, they're all great ideas when you walk in the door and say, we want to take a look at overspending. We want to take a look at tariffs. We want to take a look at our immigration problem. then set up panels, talk to people, have long-term planning, execute those plans over years, maybe. And if you have the luxury of having a second term, I mean, he won't hopefully have a third term, but that's not the case here. We don't, people were trying to share videos of President Clinton. He fired 377,000 people. Well, they were let go over a 6-year study that took in all these accounts of what's going on. That's what we could do, but we're not. He just comes in with a literal chainsaw and says, this is what we're doing, and we're doing it now. Get on board or you are un-American.
Yeah, I mean, I could make a good argument for using some targeted tariffs, and we could figure out how to do that. Although, honestly, trade policy is better than just throwing tariffs out there. It's better to have it, you know, so everyone knows the rules and it's consistent. But by not doing that and not really having a plan and then putting tariffs on countries that don't have people and, you know, all of this stuff, it becomes, you know, who can actually think what we're doing is policy, right? It's not. It's just Donald Trump's whims. And the problem is, you know, we saw what happened and is happening to the stock market because of those whims. I just heard, I was listening to BBC a little bit this morning, and they were talking at a business program about how really it's the U.S. market that's off. Everyone else is kind of going, oh, yeah, there is that crazy guy again. But they're still trading pretty well. But we're just hurting the people of the United States right now because of what's happening. And, you know, that's supposedly the opposite of what Donald Trump wants to do. But, you know, you never know. I think the other thing is last week when he said, OK, buy stocks now. And then he put the 90-day pause on, like, you know, this is corruption. We see corruption right and left in this administration. But when you signal for all those same rich people that can afford to belong to Mar-a-Lago or can get this tax break that they've been, you know, it's their holy grail for the year. This is also like a signal to them to make money. And, you know, we need a president that's fighting for us, not just a few people.
Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has said, because she has admitted that she made a whole bunch of money when that happened, but she's not involved in it at all. Her traders do those things. Of course, not that anyone would tell the traders that this might be coming, which would give you a little heads up about that. What is the likelihood that there will be any kind of legislation cracking down on insider trading within Congress?
There already is legislation. I'm a sponsor of what we've had in past sessions as well, because I get inside information, bluntly, from companies in district, from sitting in classified briefings, from having the experts in the world, but especially in the country, coming and talking to me. So I shouldn't be able to buy stock like everybody else. That is inside information. So there's legislation introduced, and Hakeem Jeffries just said he supports it, given what we just saw. The problem is, do you think that Mike Johnson is going to say, you know, it's the right thing to do?
Right.
No, I just don't expect that to happen. So all the rich members of Congress that buy their own stocks in trades are still going to make a lot of money off this. And we're going to continue to lose respect for the institution because of it. But until we have a change in who's in charge, no.
Well, and unfortunately, forgive me, but I do think it's important to point out that this is a problem on both sides of the aisle as far as members of Congress getting really, really wealthy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, half of my colleagues are millionaires. I'm not. You know, the
you got to try harder.
Yeah.
I know. I just got to buy some stock, I guess.
Come on.
You know, I'd be so much better off. But, you know, that's the problem is a lot of people, you know, congressional salary is like spending money, not like income, not like a job. And, you know, when they don't have to live in the same way as our constituents do, you know, then you're not making decisions in the same way. You're making decisions with a certain class of folks that you hang around with that do stock trades and things, you know, like
right.
The rest of us probably, you know, fill our tanks and gas. They're doing these other things. And that's part of the problem with the way Congress is made up.
If you're just joining us, Representative Mark Pocan is our guest, taking time out to give us a half an hour to kick things around because there's a lot of things going on in Washington. Representative, I want to go back to something you talked about. You mentioned small businesses, and we know that small businesses really are a major driver of the economy. And certainly the attention that Governor Evers gave to small businesses during COVID really helped Wisconsin weather that storm. And these tariffs in particular have got to be crushing, just crushing for our small businesses in Wisconsin. What are you hearing from folks?
Well, let me just use one sector just to give you an example, and that's agriculture, right? Our number one trading partner, if you're a bigger farm, And you don't have to be a big farm, but a bigger farm, and you're trading overseas. I mean, your number one trading partner is Canada. Number two is Mexico. Number three is China. Those were the first three countries that got tariffs, right? So already you're disrupting that level of agriculture. Then if you're a small farmer, or like the guest I brought to the State of the Union, he's got a CSA and about 90-100 families buy their vegetables and dairy from him. The milk bottles that he puts the milk in for them, the raw product comes from the U.S., goes to Canada. They're made in Canada. They come back to the U.S. They're going to get tariffed twice on the way there for the raw product and on the way back. And the price of milk bottles is going to double. Well, that means we all pay more for milk from a farmer like that because of tariffs. So, you know, just a market like that alone is hugely impacted. But, you know, what small business can you walk into anywhere in the United States where there's probably not, you know, a large number of products that are made in China or some other country? And, you know, if you can't guess where the tariffs are today because it's a constant roulette wheel of the daily tariff levels, then how do you know what to charge? Sometimes you'll absorb some of those losses, but only for so long. Sometimes you're going to raise prices, but then you don't want to raise prices if 3 days later or 2 days later, Donald Trump's going to lift them. At the end of the day, if you want to make things in the U.S. and I want to make things in the U.S., you need industrial policy to make companies make things here again. And the only way you're going to do that is by helping, you know, those companies to do that. But it's not going to happen in a week or two to do that. You know, it's often years to build up that production to do actually in the United States. So, you know, there's a like a broken clock is right twice a day. Donald Trump, I guess, can be right twice a day, but just he's doing it in a completely wrong way.
Well, and there's even questions about the mathematical formula they used to decide what level of tariffs they were going to institute on certain countries. I would feel better if they had used something from Schoolhouse Rock. At least I would know that that was based in some form of reality.
Look, do you trust the guy on numbers who thinks he weighs 224 pounds? Right? I am just not trusting this guy on numbers, period.
Representative Mark Pocan is our guest. When we return, we're going to talk about Mr. Garcia, who is still, we assume, alive in a Salvadoran prison. And so far, the Trump administration seems to be just ignoring the ruling of the Supreme Court. We'll continue our conversation with Mark Pocan on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Representative Mark Pocan is our guest, talking about some of the many, many goings on in Washington. Representative, we did want to ask you about the case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia. The Trump administration maintains that he is a member of a gang, and therefore they were justified in sending him to this prison in El Salvador. The Supreme Court essentially said, you need to bring him back. You need to facilitate bringing him back. And yet the Trump administration maintains they can't do that. He's in El Salvador, a sovereign country. The president of El Salvador was in the Oval Office this week saying, yeah, no, we're not bringing him back. What's next?
Yeah, well, I think this is we've been waiting to see what challenges Trump is going to do to various court orders. The good news is, and it is good news, we've had over 60 positive adjudications out of courts, over 45 different judges, including Trump-appointed judges, against things he's been doing. So we're doing pretty well with the rule of law. Including this decision by the Supreme Court. The question is, at what point, when you can't appeal it or do anything else, what happens if he doesn't comply? And right now it seems to be a debate over the word facilitate, which is idiotic. But, you know, if he can do this with someone who didn't do anything wrong, and this was an anonymous tip about this person, which no one else has said is true, that this person is a gang member. So, you know, Trump is just trying to save egg from his face. And I think he's afraid that other people could be challenged if he loses this challenge. Yes. So he just wants to stay awful, right, is what he's doing. But I think, you know, right now, Chris Van Hollen, senator from Maryland, who used to be the head of the budget committee in the House when I first got to Congress, one of the best and smartest members, truly, of the Senate, just landed this morning, excuse me, in El Salvador, to try to get more information and figure out what's happening. So I'm hoping, I mean, at some point, you know, as the legal challenges happen on this, we'll see where we get with Donald Trump. But the fact that they're so awful that they won't return someone they admit was by, man, you know, at what point, this is not a government for the people and by the people. This is a government run by a tyrant, a wannabe king. And we've got to stand up to this guy more.
And what does it say about two world leaders who they, I mean, it would be one thing if either president said, I won't do it, but they're both saying, I don't have the power. Well, right. What power do you have then? What can you do? You could have put the man on the plane when the president came to from El Salvador to America. I'm sure there was room.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello had conversations like this, right? Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know. Who's on third? Like, you know, I wish I remembered as a kid. I remembered the whole layout of that. But, you know, that's what they're kind of doing right now. But it's going to be, where does the legal challenge stop and what happens when you don't follow a legal challenge? This may be the first high-profile one. The good news, and again, I like to share good news. I did my podcast with Liberty and Justice for Some last Friday with Josh Call. We'll play it soon. And one of the things he made a point of, and I thought was really interesting, was he said, you know, and by and large, they're following the court orders. When the court says you got to do something differently, the Trump administration is following it. So the rule of law is working. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer and I've never been maybe the biggest fan of the legal, you know, lawyers in general, but right now they're saving us. It's litigation and communication that's working for us. So this just may be one of the highest profile challenges, but by and large, we are winning when it comes to court orders.
And I do want to clarify something, Representative, because we are accused of, you're supporting gang members and you want to allow gang members to run free. The whole point of this case with Mr. Garcia is due process. And right. if they don't have to do due process with this man, why should they have to do it with anyone, including American citizens? There is a really chilling article in the Bulwark that we will include in our show notes talking about, now I'm afraid to leave my own country because I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to get back in.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, if they can go after here, what next? You know, we know he's got a lot of populations he's targeted. He has an enemies list. And then, you know, what else can he do to folks without due process? And that's what we are, as a nation of laws, right? So that is important. But also think about it. Anyone that you want to, you know, try to get in trouble, you can just say that they're a gang member or whatever, anonymous tip. And if they can be disposed of, sent out of the United States,
disappeared.
I mean, how thrilling, is that to have as some kind of a template for future action?
Absolutely. Representative Mark Pocan is our guest. Let's talk town halls. It seems like some of our elected officials are holding town halls and others not so much.
Yeah, well, I saw Marjorie Taylor Greene just did one and they tased one of the protesters outside. I'll leave that to just everyone, you know, hearing that. But I'm doing a town hall tonight in Monroe, in Greene County, in my district. And then next Tuesday, I'm doing one in Derek Van Orden's district in La Crosse at 5 p.m. because we want to make sure that we're doing, you know, town halls where members aren't listening. And Derek Van Orden has never done an open public town hall in over almost now 2.5 years. So I'm going to, again, try to show him how to do it. He's invited. I'd love to do it with him, but if he's not going to come, I'll be glad to pick up the slack.
We also had a question from Andrew on the text line who said, please have Representative Pocan tell us, what is the best way to get our politicians to listen to us?
Yeah, I mean, don't let them get away with being cowards, right? That's what Derek Van Orden's doing right now. He's hiding in his basement instead of having public town halls. Actually, to be fair, I think he's on an international codel right now to Greece. Tough gig. A lot of Republicans, there was a reporter actually going around asking, a lot of Republicans are doing international codels during this in-district period because they're afraid of their constituents, which I find amazing.
Seriously.
Right? They found a way to leave the country rather than go home. But, you know, if they're having a meeting at the chamber, then be outside there and make it a town hall. Whatever they're doing, make them have to have a town hall and invite the press, because the press is rightfully so upset if you're not going to have accountability. Every town hall I've done in Derek's district, we've had great media turnout for that very reason. So don't let them get away with being chicken. Don't let them get away with not listening to you. Our job is to represent people's values in Washington and explain Washington back home.
You can always find the applicable phone numbers at myvote@wi.gov. MyVote@WI.gov. Check it out. Make a call. Let them know you're watching. Representative Mark Pocan, thank you so very much for your time, sir. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks as always. Thanks so much.
Take care. News coming up next. Stay close. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Buck, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We do have baseball action tonight. Tigers at the Brewers. The broadcast starts at 6:05. You can listen to the game on terrestrial radio, on WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN Racine and Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and in Hayward, WBZH. The crew hosting the Tigers tonight. The game starts at 6:05. We are joined by Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters. Deb, we've had a lot of listeners coming in with questions for you, so it's going to be a busy couple of segments. But good morning, and thanks for making time for us. How are you?
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me. This SAVE Act is a big deal, let's talk.
It really is. So the SAVE Act passed in the House last week. This is something that was in Project 2025. In case people are not familiar, because yes, they are instituting things in under the Trump administration that were in Project 2025. But one of the first questions we got was from a listener I will call Jane, for example, so that we don't have to use her name. So here is her question, Deb. If a woman has a valid passport with both her maiden and married names on it, is this enough documentation to prove I am who I am? So say, for example, my name is Jane Ann Matner Clooney. Just as an example, Jane Ann Matner Clooney, but my birth certificate says Jane Ann Matner. Would that be enough for me to bring to my polling place, and would they accept that?
Short answer, yes. The SAVE Act, as it passed the House, indicates that there are three sets of documents that will enable you to prove citizenship. One of them is a passport. So as long as you are holding a passport, you will be able to vote. The other two are your naturalization papers, if you are naturalized, and passports and birth certificate.
Okay.
Gotta have a birth certificate. So But keep in mind that though that sounds on its surface, okay, you know, we all had a birth certificate. We, most of us maybe have a passport. You know, if we're naturalized, we know where our naturalization papers are. Should be a no-brainer. Tribal IDs will no longer count. Tribal IDs do not state your birthplace. So now a member of a tribe in the state of Wisconsin and across the nation will have to subsequently prove where they were born. And, you know, that may or may not be easy for folks. Somebody who has lost their passport or has lost their birth certificate, maybe through a natural disaster. Maybe their parent had it and never gave it to them. They just don't have their birth certificate. You know, so we think about the exceptions to the rules. And the SAVE Act, beyond just having these three very limiting pieces of citizenship proof, it takes away other intrinsic voting rights. For instance, in Wisconsin, we can register to vote online. The SAVE Act specifically will disallow that, so there's no more online registration. You have to present in person to your clerk one of those three pieces of documentation to be able to ensure that you can register to vote. Every time you move, you will have to do that. So now let's suppose you live in a rural Wisconsin county. Your clerk doesn't maintain regular office hours because she works very part-time and works out of her kitchen. How are you going to, as a senior perhaps, moving from senior independent living to senior assisted living to senior nursing living, each of those moves, your address changes, each of those moves. Now, you will be compelled to go to your clerk's office and show your new address and your proof of citizenship.
And that would hold, Deb, even if I'm going to be staying within the same county. Just with the change of address, that is going to be enough. That you change address, doesn't matter if you move, if you're staying in the same county, you're staying in the same city. If your address changes, you have to show up in person to re-register again.
Whereas right now, say I live downtown in the city of Madison and I'm in a high-rise apartment building and I'm on the second floor, something opens up on the 10th floor and I want it, so I move up there. Right now, I just have to inform the clerk that I moved to a new unit number at the same address. In the future, I would have to go to the clerk's office to show that I have moved to this new address and again present one of those three pieces of citizenship proof.
Well, and the other thing too that I'm hearing from you, Deb, is, you know, a lot of people don't have their birth certificate, the one with the raised stamp on that. And people don't have passports. Granted, the argument might be, well, let's just get your, it's your birth certificate. You can go get one. That costs money. That means in order to vote, you have to pay for a document. If you want a passport, that's even more expensive. That is, and it's a time consuming process because you have to go apply, get a picture, send it in, wait, get it. And then you spent money on this in order to vote. That has been said before. We'll say it's a poll tax.
It's quite exclusionary. There's no questions about that. My friend Jay Heck over at Common Cause Wisconsin yesterday put out a piece that I found to be very interesting. He did some research here in the state of Wisconsin. And according to his numbers, 3,269,361 individuals in Wisconsin have no passport.
Yep. Say the number again, please.
3,269,361 individuals living in Wisconsin do not have a passport. So all of those now will be forced either to get a passport or to make sure they have a copy of their birth certificate and the other ID that would be necessary to accompany that birth certificate. So this is in addition, in Wisconsin, our ID laws and proof of residency requirements, they don't go away. This is on top of. Mm. And so it will be more onerous for, you know, half of the state's population, essentially, to maintain their eligibility to vote. He also indicated that there are 1,316,546 married women in the state of Wisconsin. And those women, without a passport, without access to a birth certificate, without access to naturalization papers if they're naturalized, would not be easily registered to vote. They're going to have to go through the hoop of getting a subsequent piece of citizenship proof to make sure that they can register. Now, keep in mind, I don't want to like be running with my hair on fire here. If you're currently registered and you do not move, you're good to go.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many people who are transient. You know, think of our military families. Think of, you know, older people who are moving, you know, at their aging and they're moving from one kind of facility to another kind of facility. Think of young people. You know, you live maybe in two different kind of campus housing units. Then you move to your first apartment. You live there a year or two. Then you move to a second place. Maybe you buy a house in a couple of years. At each of those junctures, you'll be forced to go into your clerk's office and present your proof of citizenship. And this is just, you know, and in my mind, it's a means, a way to prevent eligible voters from easily accessing their voice, their vote by, you know, being an eligible and registered voter.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, Deb Cronmiller is here from the Wisconsin League of Women Voters, and we are talking about the SAVE Act that passed in the House last week. That will still have to move on to the Senate and get approval in the Senate, correct, Deb?
Absolutely. Yes. And the League of Women Voters, if you go to our website and many other voting rights advocates' websites, you will find information on how to contact, in Wisconsin, our two senators, Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson, and let them know that we do not think it's a good idea for this to be passed by the Senate. And the Senate has the opportunity to stop this piece of legislation from becoming law. And but the Senate has to hear from members in Wisconsin, yes, members in every state of the union, that these additional requirements, this attempt to suppress the vote, this is not what Americans want. We want the access to the ballot.
And the unfortunate truth for some is that there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. None. Wisconsin taxpayers spent over $2 million that we paid to Michael Gableman to hunt down all that fraud after the 2020 election. And what did he find? Oh, wait, zippo. None. Zero. There is no reason to increase these restrictions on voting except to stop people who might not vote for them.
Well, and that was the thing that I wanted to mention, too, is that while this is a nonpartisan discussion, in my opinion, because of its effect, this will affect people who voted for Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, Jill Stein, Bernie Sanders. It'll affect so many people. We are going to see individuals at the polls in the coming years scratching their head, confused, not knowing what, because like we've said before, not everybody has every minute in the hour to listen to us and talk about these things. So it's important to be informed right now. And that important point to say is, if you're registered and you voted, you're good right now. That's good to know.
We're going to continue our conversation with Deb Cronmiller on the other side. We have another listener question for you as well, Deb and Jack. I see you on the line. Hang on. We'll take you when we return. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay close.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the Board, coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, 855-752-4842. You can call, you can text that same number, or leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by Deb Kronmiller from the Wisconsin League of Women Voters. All kinds of questions coming in for you, Deb, that we'll get to in a minute. But let's go back to the lack of voter fraud, widespread voter fraud that one party seems to bank everything on. It's there's cheating. There is no evidence that there is enough voter fraud in any instance to have changed the outcome of any election.
That's absolutely truthful. And the kind of voter fraud that this SAVE Act is targeting would be non-citizen voter fraud, where non-citizens are coming to the polls, claiming they're a citizen and casting a vote. Well, of all the types of fraud that we know to be documented in the United States, this is like the one that has the least prevalence. And that's because non-citizens know they're not eligible to vote.
Yeah.
Non-citizens can't produce even the documents needed in Wisconsin to register to vote.
Right.
In our Constitution, for federal elections, it's a felony.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's, you know, talk about being afraid of committing a high crime. A non-citizen voting, that's a felony. Non-citizens, by the way, know that.
I know, Deb and Jane, you have your information, but it just seems like millions upon millions of non-citizens are voting because that's what they tell me.
Yeah, there's
being bamboozled.
Yes. There it is.
And there's there is no evidence of this. And Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, saying he knows intuitively that this is happening. Sorry for me, that ain't good enough, Mike. Try again. Here's another question we had from a listener, Deb. Say I get divorced. I was asked if I want to keep my husband's name or go back to my maiden name. If I get divorced and I keep my husband's last name, is that okay to vote?
Yes, as long as you have one of the, if this would pass into law, and it's got to go through the Senate,
right?
But if it would pass in its current iteration, you would still need to present a passport. So if the passport has your husband's name on it, and that's you, you're good to go. Your naturalization papers, if you're a naturalized citizen, or your birth certificate.
And another question I had, Deb, if you can clarify this, please. I thought your birth certificate had to match your driver's license, but this kind of knocks the driver's license requirement out the window, right?
Your driver's license is your proof of identification, not of citizenship.
Ah.
So what this SAVE Act is trying to do is create an additional layer where you're proving you're a citizen. So you were born here in the United States, which is why the birth certificate is so important.
Right.
And then if your name changes, there's those additional hoops of, you know, my maiden name is different than my now married name. And so my birth certificate has my maiden name on it.
Right.
I was married. My county paperwork shows that I officially went from my maiden name to my married name. My current driver's license, my current passport have my married name. So I'm good to go. But, you know, keep those 3.2 million plus people in Wisconsin who don't have a passport. They're not good to go necessarily. And that's what we want to do. We want to ensure that everyone who's eligible can cast that vote.
There was a mention from Cassandra on the live stream about trans folks being disenfranchised by this as well. I don't know if we'll have time to get into it, but I did in the show notes in hour two include an article talking about how the SAVE Act will affect the trans community here in America. So if we can't get to it, it's there for you.
We're probably not going to have enough time for that right now, yeah. Deb, but we'll have you back. Someone else asked on the live stream, Deb, obviously your passport is going to have to be current. You're not going to be able to use an expired passport.
Correct, is my understanding.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, I don't want to not be transparent.
Oh, she just froze. We'll see if Deb comes back.
Really quick before Deb comes back. Go on. Go on, Deb.
Okay. It would need to pass the Senate and to be enacted into law. It could be amended. It could be changed. So there's a big part of me that's like, I know what the House passed.
Right.
And so I'm speaking to that. What it would look like in its final version, and I pray there is no final version,
right,
and that this is stopped in its tracks. But it could be different. So we do have to be careful, I think, about implying or saying that, if this now, then this.
Sure.
I just don't know.
Well, this is not a done deal yet. This is the process is not over, but we're just trying to give people a little heads up.
Yeah.
Like, I think now would be a really good time if you do not have a birth certificate, get a copy of your birth certificate. Mm-hmm. Maybe get a couple.
If you were born in Wisconsin, you can request a birth certificate from your county of birth. They'll process that, and there is no cost for that, although you might have to pay for mailing. If you were born in another state, many states charge non-state residents for birth certificates or certified copies of birth certificates. So that could be a cost that you would have to incur. If you want to convert that birth certificate ultimately into a passport, then you have the passport costs on top of that as well. So this is, as I think it was Greg mentioned before, no matter how you look at it, could be a poll tax,
yep,
on voters who don't already have these pieces of documentation.
Absolutely. And real quickly, Deb, so the star that we all have to get now on our driver's licenses in order to go to federal buildings and to fly domestically, that has nothing to do with what is in the SAVE Act.
Yeah, there are only a couple of states who actually connect citizenship to the Real ID. Wisconsin is not one of them.
Okay.
So Real ID will not help you in Wisconsin. And it's another problem with the SAVE Act is that it's leaving it up to the states to decide, which could cause differences between A state and B state.
Yep.
And that's just another reason for concern.
Deb Cronmiller is the executive director of the Wisconsin League of Women Voters. Thank you so very much, Deb. We'll have to get you back on in a couple of weeks. We have all kinds of questions we didn't get around to. Thank you so very much for your time. News is coming up next. When we return, resident young person Calvin explains. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.